welcome to the Rookie Pester Podcast. My name is Eric Nabbitt, and I am your host. And today I bring you a two-part conversation with my friend and former coach, Matt Bowling. Matt Bowling is the executive director of Flourish Coaching. And in our conversation today, in this part one of our conversation, we talk about what Flourish Coaching is, what they do for pastors and churches. We talk about Matt's background as a pastor and what he has done there. We also talk about freeing church leaders with the gospel, why pastors need coaches, the common struggles that churches face, and especially right now in the time of the coronavirus. And we also talk about the importance of, Matt just offers a lot of wise counsel for setting the priorities as the church, and particularly for church leadership. We also have a fun discussion of worn out logos and graphics that are used in a lot of seminary articles and blog posts. And so it's a great conversation. Matt's a lot of fun to talk to. And so I hope you enjoy this part one of our conversation, and be sure to come back for part two. And as always, thanks for listening. Well, hello and welcome to the Rookie Pester Podcast. My name is Eric Mabbitt. I'm your host. And today I have with me Matt Bowling. Say hi, Matt.
Hi, Matt.
And, you know, my dad did that the other day on a different podcast. So,
hi, Eric.
Glad to have you on. So, this is Matt Bowling. He is the executive director.
That's right.
The executive director of Flourish Coaching. And so, Matt, could you just explain briefly what Flourish Coaching is and what y'all do for pastors and churches?
Sure. So Flourish was started by three pastors who wanted to come alongside other pastors and coach them, particularly in the area of church planting and church renewal. We had been in the denominational setting where church planting had had a lot of emphasis, but church renewal hadn't. And when we looked at the scriptures, we saw that these were both important to God. And so we wanted to start, we wanted to be a part of finding both of those equally important. And so we just started a company because we were three friends that wanted to do coaching together. And so since the founding of Flourish, Flourish started in 2015, so about 5 years ago. And since then, we've expanded into not just coaching pastors, but we'll come alongside churches. And so we'll do things like we do something called the church health assessment, where we'll come alongside a church and help them see where they've been and where they are. We'll help churches with trying to find some kind of direction for their ministry. We call that envisioning. And then we'll also help churches that are without a pastor find a pastor. We have a better process. We think we have a good process for helping churches do that. We help churches with strategic planning. We help whole denominations. So we do a variety of stuff, but it's fun. It's a good life.
Oh, that's great. And I noticed that y'all's logo is that a bush, a plant? Is that
a tree? Sure.
Yeah. Yep. Because that's required for anything as to do with like churches, church planting. You have to have like a plant.
Or organic model. Something about Jesus and the mustard seed and, you know, something like that, you know.
There has to be some like email that you send out through Constant Contact that has like a guy with dirt in his hands and this little, plant growing out of it. You know?
It may be the most overused graphic.
The most overused graphic is the the seminarian graphic. Are you familiar with this? It's a guy who's in blue jeans and like a gray like blazer, and he's got a saddlebag like pack, and he's got a Bible in the other hand. Like so now it's like funny because whenever it pops up on like a blog, like Jared Wilson did a great post, but they put, I don't know if he or the editor put that as the top graphic. And it was funny because one of the RTS seminary professors said, "Oh, here we go." And he said, the seminarian has popped up again. So
that's right. Can't get rid of him.
Yeah. Cause it's in like every advertisement and like Reformed College
you know, Reformed College.
It is the graphic.
Yeah, it's the picture. This guy is everywhere. He never graduates. He just goes from college to college, you know, so.
Never ages either, which would be, you know, preferable, but.
Yeah. So, so what's a little bit of your background? I mean, you've pastored several churches. So, so what's a little bit of your background so people know?
Yeah. So I got converted in college, and about 6 months later, I ran into ministry that's now called Crew, and was a student leader with Crew, and then a missionary with Crew. Met my wife while I was working for Crew. She was also a missionary, and when both of our commitments to Crew were up, we decided to go to seminary. We went to seminary in Southern California, where my wife was from. She was a Navy kid, and so her dad flew helicopters for the Navy, and so we went to seminary at Westminster in California, and interned at a church there, and had such a good experience, stayed on, and was on the staff of that church in near San Diego. And then pastored a church from there, pastored a church in Western Pennsylvania for about 6 years. It was, I followed the church planter, and it was a church that needed renewal right off the bat. Too many of our churches that get planted need renewal by the second pastor, sadly. Was there about 6 years, and then intentionally moved to Seattle. To take a church that was an old church, the other end of the spectrum, about 70 years old, that was in need of renewal. And we've been here in Seattle for a little over a dozen years. And it was while we were in the time that we were here in Seattle that Flourish was started. And then when my time with my church was up in 2018, almost 2 years ago, I started working for Flourish full-time as executive director. That's a little bit of my background.
Okay, that's great. And so, so we've talked about what Flourish is, what Flourish does, and your background as well. And I guess we've talked about that, but I mean, kind of what is the heart behind the ministry? Like, yeah. I mean, you did touch on that at the beginning of why, what's the,
so our the belief is the oeuvre, yes, the oeuvre. I think that the oeuvre is, we really want to see leaders freed with the gospel. That the main thing that we see with leaders is that they're constrained in many times in their own personal lives, certainly in their pastoring and their leadership in churches. And a lot of times that's because there isn't the sort of personal gospel apprehension to free them to be effective. And so that's really our lifeblood. It's what we want to try and do. We want to help leaders be effective wherever God's placed them, to see them free with the gospel. We do that. The particular way we go about doing that is something we call three-facet coaching, which is coaching that finds equally important, to put it, you know, really simply, what's in a guy's head, what's in a guy's heart, and what he does with his hands. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes guys' heads can be in the wrong place. They're not thinking about the right sorts of things. And many times that's that they're so mired down in all the stuff that needs to be done week by week, they can forget that Christ is bringing a kingdom and using us to do it. And that today dawned because Jesus is yet gathering a people and using us to do it. And we frequently forget that. We forget the kingdom mandate and that we're here because Jesus is gathering a people and he's using us to do it. So we can get pastors that forget that. Their head's not in the right space, right? They're not hopeful anymore that Jesus is doing something. Head, heart, guys can be in a spot where they're so downcast themselves. Maybe their marriage isn't thriving, or they're having struggles with their kids or extended family, or even just the personal struggles of being a pastor, the insecurity, the anxiety, the fearfulness that really prevent them from doing the work well. And so we want to help them with their heart and then their hands. A lot of times pastors, this is one of the most, you were talking about the seminarian earlier, one of the most familiar refrains that you'll hear from pastors is they shouldn't teach you how to deal with this in seminary. Yeah. And that's about 75% of pastoring are not skills that you get in seminary. Mm-hmm. Soft skills, conflict, how to do conflict well, even just interpersonally, how to build relationships with people, people in the church, people outside of the church, how to work with leaders, how to lead leaders, how to do planning.
And I want to just interject there because, and I don't think those are things that seminary can teach or right. should try to teach, because that's not what they're designed to do.
Right.
And so, I mean, that's those kind of soft skills really are things that really should be developed in personal sanctification, but also in really good, intentional, thoughtful internships and mentoring. Yeah. Right. And yeah. so that's kind of the heart of why presbyteries have internships in candidacy, is because you're meant to get that taste of pastoral life, to see what it is to visit people in jail and then the hospital, to preach and to teach, to counsel people, to, you know, to see that. And so, unfortunately, though, sometimes it just becomes hoops that people jump through, and then they just kind of go into it. Well, I want to ask you a question though, I would think then that only terrible and incompetent pastors need coaches, right?
Oh, one of our founders who's now with the Lord, his favorite refrain is the guy named Ted Strawbridge, but he would say everybody needs a coach.
Yeah. And actually, and just in full disclosure, you were my coach for 5 years.
Right. Right.
So I say that tongue in cheek, but to push back against the idea that, you know, only pastors who are absolutely in crisis or who are about to get fired or something need it. Yeah. You may need a coach if you're in that situation, but good pastors need coaches. They need those relationships, particularly if they don't, and particularly if they just don't have them. And so I know that I talk with pastors privately, and some of them feel very lonely because they're out in the middle of nowhere, or because there's problems in their church that they don't feel like they can actually talk openly with their session about. Let's move from the general kind of discussion here, because I really want to get into kind of what you're doing and working with pastors, and obviously not getting into specifics. You know, sure. I want names.
Sure.
Names and personal confidential details.
I'm planning on it. I have my list right here next to me of things I can disclose today.
All right.
What is it like the British press? We're permitted to disclose, you know, or whatever the phrase is, right?
Yeah. Everything has to be given in like metaphors and very vague, you know? So what are, as you're coaching pastors and churches, what are some of the common struggles that you're coming across that you're being asked to kind of weigh in on?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say, we're recording this in the middle of the COVID shutdown. And I think that part of the challenge, I mean, in this very moment right now, is just people trying to get over the technological hurdles of trying to keep church happening, you know, in the midst of a shutdown. And so that's has been much more, consuming us of late. I think that the other thing, that would be one big thing. If I were to, you know, just sort of recount the last, you know, 6 months of coaching conversations that I've had, you know, across our ministry and the people that we're working with, I would say that one of the primary ones that we end up talking with people a lot about is how to have difficult conversations. So we are very frequently talking to people about Edwin Friedman, A Failure of Nerve. We're talking to people about Crucial Conversations.
I love that book.
You love that book, yeah.
Yeah. I've talked to you about it, and I've said this so many times to you before, and it's been so fundamental because I just want to go ahead and just share a little nugget out of that book, which is why it's so great. Is that it really for me? The Crucial Conversations was helpful because it gave me a framework in which to interpret conflict and to determine my response to it. And so they talk about these three levels of conflict, where there's the occasional the occasional instance, kind of the one-off, somebody just having a bad day and they do something wrong, that it's just, you know, it can be either ignored or just a mild correction, and then you move on with your day. And then there's the a pattern of behavior issue where this is something, a behavior that's being repeated that is detrimental to the success of, this is a corporate book, so I mean, to the success of business or the team. But in church, you know, it's maybe a spiritual struggle, a sinful struggle, something or on that just needs to be addressed, either because it's affecting the life of the ministry of the church or it's affecting the person's personal life. But it's a pattern. And so you actually have to address it and come up with a plan for how to address that, that will be revisited and right. to see if it's getting better. And then there's the most serious level, which is relational, which is like the fundamental aspects of our relationship. You think of like relationship between the elder and the member. And is this a relational problem where there's a breakdown in terms of they're not even recognizing my authority as an elder? Well, then you know, it's like, then that's a whole, you know, that's the big problem that we got to. So it really just helped me, you know, whenever I'm dealing with somebody or even counseling people who are wrestling with conflict, I'll often say, well, here, you know, you need to ask yourself, is this an occasional thing? Is it a pattern of behavior? Or is this a relational problem? Because what, depending on what it is, determines how you respond. It's just been so helpful because that helps you from making mountains out of molehills. Yep. And from ignoring what are actually serious problems. So.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of, I would say that the majority of pastors, you know, I've been coaching pastors for, I don't know, 8 or 9 years probably. And I would say that the majority of pastors that I have coached know what they should do. They just don't find any power or ability to go do it.
And then there's Eric.
Who like half knows what he should do and the other half he goes and does. But many times we know, we're kind of like, well, yeah, I know I should lead in that way, but there's no way that I could pull that off. Or yeah, you're right. This person's a problem, but I'm scared to death of him. It'll blow up my whole church if I go address that. And so that's that. One of the reasons why we want to see leaders freed with the gospel is so that they can be effective. Because if you leave, and I have suffered this as a pastor, where I left things unaddressed, situations, staff members, officers, individual congregants, you know, where I left stuff unaddressed. And the reason that I'm so enthusiastic about Crucial Conversations is that it helped me get through one of the very most thorny and difficult issues I ever went through as a pastor, dealing with a disaffected elder who eventually peaceably ended up leaving our church. I wished it could have been different than it was, but it either needed to be different or he needed to leave, and he chose to leave. And I wish it hadn't had to come to that, but it certainly had to be addressed. So that's one of the things that we end up dealing a lot with, is just helping guys, you know, gain some backbone to lead where they think they need to go, and give them the practical help to walk it out step by step.
And later on, I'm looking at having a professional counselor on the podcast, and hopefully he can diagnose what's wrong with me. But
yes, that'll be helpful.
Yeah, well, it's benefit of psychology students everywhere. So, but one of the things I want to put to him, and this is kind of applying it to this church pastoral situation, is that the question I'm going to have for him is the there's this tension, right? That's almost universal. It's this kind of silent tension that's upon our nation, you say our world, but just all over. And that's just kind of this anxious tension that is upon a lot of people. And that just makes everything worse. Like it just ratchets everything up, makes the depression darker, makes the fuse shorter. And so, I guess it's one of those things where you know, I would imagine that, you know, you know, it heightens, I think, and maybe you can speak to this, is the sense of, I know for me, like as a pastor who is, you know, under shelter at home orders, that my concern is that I'm not doing enough. Doing enough. And I'm at home, so there's really nothing but silence, right? There's not the regular interaction I have with my church members, with the elders and the deacons in our church, where I get that feedback, unless I go call them or go chase it down. So there's this pervading sense of, you're not doing enough. You're not doing enough. Do more, do more, do more. And so how are you, or how would you counsel, pastors who are wrestling with that, who are feeling that shame of, I'm not doing enough?
Yeah. Yeah.
When they actually are.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah. So I think a couple of ways, one, I don't know, three or four, but we'll go down this road and see if I forget any. One is trying to make sure that the pastor is solid in their own apprehension of the gospel for themselves, that God could not love them any more than he does right now. Can I tell you a story and then come back to the thread?
Yes.
So my wife's parents had gotten divorced just a couple of years before we met. And so she was really, really skittish about us getting engaged and moving towards marriage. And frankly, understandably, to be honest with you, really understandably. And so as I had grown up, and my parents are still together. So I had this really wonderful, stable family background. And so I didn't have the same kind of tension in my heart that she did. But as I prayed for her, prayed for us, and prayed us towards getting engaged and then married, one of the things that felt like the Lord was leading me to was just to find some way to very concretely tell my future wife, here's why I love you, and this is how committed I am to you. And so I said to her, because she's very beautiful. She had been a Division I college athlete, so she's, you know, really very fit kind of person. And so she was fearful, you know, if I have kids, if I lose my beauty, you know, what will you leave me like my father left my mother, right? Kind of very traditional, understandable American woman conundrum, especially with divorced parents. And I said, look, I want to marry you because of what God has done in your heart and is doing in your heart and the inner beauty that he's given you. That's what I'm attracted to. The rest of it's nice, but that's really what I'm committed to. So if you ended up tomorrow in a wheelchair, I still want to be married to you. I still want to live the rest of my life with you. Some years later, I told that story, and the Lord used that wonderfully. And my wife and I have been married for almost 25 years, almost 24 years. And I told that story some years later to one of my longest term friends, and he turned it around on me in a way that was really, really helpful. One time he left me a voicemail, actually. And he said, Matt, I want you to know that if you were the one who was stuck in that wheelchair and you could never do anything ever again, do you know that God could not love you any more than he does right now? And I saved that voicemail for months and months and months and kept listening to it. Because I'm a doer. I love to get stuff done. I love to achieve things. And that's just hard for us to grab onto.
Well,
could not love us any more than he does right now.
Well, that's one thing. I mean, that was something. I mean, you never had to tell me that, because I always had that down. But well, I think you only had to tell me that like every time we had a call. So
most times.
Yeah. So but yeah, so having the pastors make sure that they're beginning, you know, they begin their preaching of the gospel grace to themselves.
To themselves.
And then, yes. But how do you deal with that aspect of, I mean, there's two aspects to this. One is, I think, discerning, because you could do infinite number of things right now, right?
Sure, absolutely.
So, and I've seen a lot of helpful blogs and yep. just advice. You sent me resources as well that, you know, said, hey, you know, just make sure that you're, you know, don't try to do too much. And here, you know, make sure that you're focusing on communication and prayer. And so they're like, they gave some really great fundamentals. And so how do we discern how much we can do and what the things are that we must do, that we should, that we have to do? Because,
sure.
Because if we're honest, we'll say, you know what, if I look back at my week or look back at my schedule, my alternate schedule now that we're living in an alternate earth,
right. Yeah.
Then, you know, I will admit that, hey, you know, there's probably some things I shouldn't do. Like I probably shouldn't be spending time on that. I probably should be spending time on this, you know?
Sure.
And so how do we, is it working those times of evaluation into our work? Where do you start? Do you start with the shepherd and
ask
what is ministry?
I think that the way that we've been trying to advise people, maybe branch the road, go two ways. One is, get whatever you're going to do for, you know, while we're under COVID, you know, and we're under, you know, home orders or whatever, get whatever you're going to do for your Sunday worship experience, whatever choices that you've made with your leadership together, get it nailed down, get it systematized so that you can do it week in and week out and it's not chewing you up and spitting you out, right? So that's the first thing. Second thing is, so think big group, small group, one-on-one. So small group is whatever groupings your church had before the shutdown, figure out how to do them. Most people have been doing it via Zoom or, you know, whatever, but figure out how to still get people. I like Zoom because even like as Eric and I are recording right now, we can see each other. And there's just something about being able to see each other that's really, really critical in my mind. When you can't, I have been in the physical presence of two human beings in a month outside of my family because I came back from weeks on the road to quarantine. But the ability to see people makes that a lot less difficult, to be honest with you. And so whatever way you can get your small groups to function so that people feel cared for each other, they feel heard and loved, they feel prayed for, and particularly the people that they're trying to reach out to with the gospel, that we pray by name for people that don't know Jesus. It's such a wonderful moment that we're in, that we just can't lose that. That's right, having your head straight, right? God's still bringing a kingdom, and he's brought this distress on the world for a reason. And certainly it's that the gospel would go forth from us. The one-on-one, I think, is the one where pastors can feel burdened. Did I do enough? Did I call enough people? Did I send enough texts? And this is actually one of the areas where we tend to work with pastors the most. A lot of pastors are better at vine work than trellis work. I know one of Eric's favorite books is Vine and the Trellis. I'm looking at it on my shelf over here, Trellis and the Vine. And a lot of pastors get into pastoral work because they love vine work. They like doing the organic, people-oriented side of the labor. But they're not necessarily as good at the trellis work of actually creating the structures that can help a body, a congregation stand on its own, dependent upon God. And so small group structures are a way, some way of doing that, for example. So one of the things that we've talked to pastors about is that everybody in the congregation should get some kind of personal attention week by week, but that doesn't have to be by the pastor. And maybe it's actually ideal that it's not. Ideally, you've got elders that are co-shepherds with you. They're under-shepherds of Jesus with you as a pastor. And so as long as people in your congregation hear from an elder, some elder, every week, be it with a text or an email or a phone call. We've been saying to people, smaller congregations, you probably can get a phone call to everybody every week. If you're a little bit bigger congregation, maybe you're down to where maybe your community group leaders are your primary frontline shepherds,
and also send a text. I want to add to that.
I want to add to that too.
We actually did that, but we included our deacons.
Because
the deacons are ministers of mercy, and they lead in that, and so it was fitting for us to take the list of members and divide it up. And we're a small church, and so it was easily divided up. And we actually even included some families who were just regular attenders, and they weren't mm-hmm. And even going back a few months to some families who they had been coming, but they hadn't come for a few months, but we said, hey, you know what? We're going to check in on them, see how they're doing. And just got an email back from one of those families today.
The deacons are great for that, because I think that there are a lot of people with needs. There's a lot of people on the backside of this that are going to be unemployed, that are going to need mercy ministry from our churches, that are going to need support for a period of months until they can get back on their feet. And so involving the deacons, I think, is a great stroke.
Well, that's going to do it for us today. I hope you enjoyed part one of my conversation with Matt Bowling. So please join us for the next episode, where we do part two, the last part of our conversation, as we continue to discuss the church and coronavirus and how we can respond for the sake of the gospel. And so that's it for the Rookie Pastor Podcast. I'm Eric Mabbitt. And remember, one step at a time.